I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From Postcard from the Past and Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is the podcast where we decode scrawls, read between the lines, where X marks our chalet and the sky is always blue, as we attempt to understand the memories, meanings and stories held by picture postcards. I'm Tom Jackson, and today I'm delighted to say my guests are two writers, Kieran Pym and Sophia Money-Coutts. Kieran and Sophia, hello and welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us. Good to be here.
Oh, well, I'm delighted. I'm charmed and delighted. Kieran Pym was the literary editor of the Eastern Daily Press for many years. He still writes for a number of newspapers and has perhaps the most diverse and unexpected literary CV we've met in this commodious studio. He's the author of The Bumper Book of Dinosaurs, an edition of the medieval Hebrew poetry of Mayor of Norwich, and his best-known book, the award-winning Jumpin' Jack Flash, a biography of David Litvinoff, an extraordinary man whose influence connected the East End to the West End, the Crazed to the Rolling Stones, Eric Clapton and Lucian Freud, Nicholas Roeg and Darcy Bustle. A very odd, fascinating, dangerous man. We'll hear more about him, I'm sure. Kieran comes to us with an NR3 Norwich postmark?
That's correct, yes.
Is that where you've always been? Or?
It's not where I've always been. I was born in East London, but we moved up to North Norfolk when I was young. I went back to London for university, but then after that I shuffled back to the parental home after graduating, and then our local newspaper was recruiting for graduate trainees in 2000. So 2001, I started on the Eastern Daily Press. And so I've been in journalism or writing of various descriptions ever since then.
Very good.
And living in Norfolk since
then. And it works for you?
It works for me. Norwich is a lovely city. It's full of artists, writers, beautiful historic buildings. It's a very liberal city. History of political dissent. It's an interesting place to live.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
And Kieran, do you still send postcards?
Well, I've been thinking long and hard about this, and the fact I have to think so hard about it...
It's not a good sign.
It's not, is it? I was trying to think when I last sent one, and I think it may have been on honeymoon. My wife and I went around America. This is 2006. Now, I always buy them. Wherever I go, I buy them.
Well, that's definitely half the problem solved.
It is, but the major problem is my inability to write on the back of them, put a postage stamp on them, and put them in a letterbox anywhere, and that seems to be insurmountable these days.
Well, you're not the first to do. I look at a lot of old postcards. I mean, some of them are 100 years old, more, and people write them and never got round to sending them. So even then, I think it's a physical issue, and you either do it or you don't.
I have various postcards at home that I have written that are sitting, you know, in my desk drawer or something.
Sadly.
Yeah, that's quite, it is quite sad, isn't it? Does he feel guilty about it? I would feel guilty.
Oh, I feel guilty about most things.
Oh, okay. So, just another thing to add to the list. Now, Sophia Money-Coutts, who, despite rumours, is an actual person.
Yes.
Spent 5 years labouring at the tweed face of society, studying the aristocracy as features editor for Tatler. Mm-hmm. She's put this experience to very good use in her novels. The Plus One, which the Sunday Times called howlingly funny, and it is very funny, I've read it. And her new one, What Happens Now, which by the time this goes out, I think will be out and doubtless gracing the top bestsellers charts. These are chatty, romantic, funny romps through 21st century life, skewering modern manners and what it is to look for love to a large part. And Sophia comes to us today bearing A postmark I'm having trouble reading, really. It says 1,700. What does that mean?
17. Well, I think it's actually 17,100, which is... So that relates to the town in northern Spain, in Catalonia, where my dad and my stepmother live. A house right up... It was a ruin, and actually partly built by a student of Gaudi's, right up in the hills in a region called the Gavar, very hilly, natural... region of Spain.
Sounds wonderful.
It's heaven. It's like 2 miles up a track, and actually whenever anybody comes to try and find the house and they've never been there before, I think they get halfway up the track and think, well, this can't be right. It must have gone wrong. We should have gone. I told you we should have gone left back there.
You caused the trouble.
Because it's just so far up this track, people think, well, nobody in their right mind would be up here. It's mad. Particularly because it's been particularly hot over there recently, and I think there have been lots of forest fires. Luckily, they have been untouched, but it's just a very, very special place, and it, I think it's been the home, because my parents are divorced, there's lots of divorces in my family, that I've known for the longest.
Right.
So it's, the town is called La Bisbal. So yes, that's because in Spain they have numbers, not letters. So 17,100. I'm sure they say it differently over there, but that's how I'm going
to
say it.
But that's stuck to you. You can't really escape
that's
that.
My place, yeah.
Now, before we discover the cards that Sophia and Kieran have brought along, I'll give you a quick one of mine. This is, of course, a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter, at past postcard, an old card from which I've selected just a little bit of the message. Actually, by an extraordinary coincidence, this card is Spanish.
Look at that.
As if I'd known.
Clever.
It's a very nice picture, actually, of some very fierce and proud-looking flamenco dancers in brightly coloured dresses inside a patio. Very posed, I think. They've not been caught in action there. The message is a holiday postcard. I don't have a date on it. Oh, 1966, possibly.
Love it.
A long time ago. And it was sent by someone called Jeanette and Keith. And it was sent to Hull. And the message really just outlines something of their holiday. I'll give you a flavour of it. We are having a grand time. We have met two people from Huddersfield and went to a nightclub last night, but didn't stay, as Coke was 3 and 8 each. Went to a bar and got 4 rum and Coke for 3 and 10. Now, 3 and 10 is, what, 3 shillings, 10 pence. That'd be about less than 20 pence. Was great. Finished up on champagne.
Great night out.
Yeah, now I don't know what champagne that would have
been. Carver, surely, in
Yeah, well, I'm sure it was called champagne.
Yes, that's true.
In fact, actually, this is so long ago, maybe they hadn't brought in those very strict rules about what you can and
exactly.
can't call cheddar cheese.
And Melton Mowbray pork pies.
Precisely.
And yeah,
in those days, you could sell champagne and call it a Melton Mowbray pork pie, and nothing would happen to
Simpler
you.
Simpler times.
next week, Kath and I are going bullfighting. Only baby bulls. Though, should be a laugh anyway.
Much less cruel.
Well, that's so bad,
yeah. Should be a
yes.
laugh.
Yeah, yeah. But you're right. So much less cruel to kill a baby bull. Well, perhaps they just played with them.
That's amazing.
Them.
That's a very good one.
Anyway, just to let you know at home, images of all these cards we discussed today are on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see we're not making it up. Now, Sophia and Kieran, you've been kind enough to come to the studio today with some postcards of your own. Mm-hmm. Let's start with you, Kieran.
Okay.
What's the first card you've brought along with you?
So the first card is a card from Germany. It's a wonderfully kitsch scene. It shows 4... middle-aged women, no, sorry, I'm looking closely, 3 middle-aged women and a man who is
quite fat.
Rowing. He's the oarsman. And they're sitting in a boat in the middle of a lake.
It's surreal. I don't know why that's so odd, but it is odd.
There's something very kitsch about it. Mm. And they, although it looks like rather an idyllic day out, they look really quite glum. and in the background we have this... kind of, I'd like to think it's a Bavarian scene. I'm not
yeah,
entirely sure.
Yeah, certainly a mountainscape and a town.
Yes, and a church. And so.
And it's got a nice deckle edge as well, that
has,
sort of waffly edge.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
However, it wasn't sent from Germany, it was sent from Orpington, which is where
it's
my.
It's the Bavaria of the London suburbs.
It was sent to me by my dear uncle, Brian Case, who was a literary journalist, a jazz critic, and a film critic. And he sent it to me when my first book came out, the aforementioned Bumper Book of Dinosaurs.
Oh, yes.
And Brian has always encouraged my writing from when I was a teenager. He gave me work experience. He was the book's editor on Time Out at that time. Previously, he'd written on jazz for Melody Maker and NME in the 70s. He'd interviewed anyone and everyone, really, over the years, from the worlds of film, literature, music. A great writer, great stylist, very funny, very informed. And so Brian always kind of mentored me and encouraged my writing. When I was at university, he started me off. He got me in print for the first time, other than the student magazine. He sent me some books to review for Time Out.
Oh, perfect.
And that really got me started as a writer. And he's always coaxed me along the way, really.
Is he still alive?
He is still alive. Oh. He is 81.
Oh, he might well be listening to this.
Well, he may well do. I last saw him a couple of weeks ago. We went to a jazz gig together just down the road at Peaks Express Live. A tenor saxophonist called Benny Golson, who's 90.
Wow.
He goes all the way back to the 50s when he was in Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers. You know, quite a legendary figure.
Good Lord.
And it was lovely.
That was a good catch.
Yeah. Well, it was lovely for me to see him because he's one of my favourite jazz composers. And also, it was, you know, wonderful to catch up with Brian again. Brian sent me this postcard when the book came out. And in inimitable Brian style, it made me smile. It begins, "Scoops!" Exclamation mark. This was his nickname for me as a budding journalist.
Oh, I love that.
"Well done with the book. We're prouder of you, even than when you won the snail slow slide against all comers, e.g. Laura," that's my sister. Now, this is a reference to my childhood in North Norfolk when Brian and his wife, my Aunt Sonia, and their daughters, Daisy and Molly, came to visit. And on the slide in our back garden in North Norfolk, we had a slow sliding competition. How slow can you go down the slide in the back garden?
Brilliant. But that's a whole day's activity.
Well, it is in Norfolk.
Well, if you were going to be the winner, yes.
And this in Aylsham, the town where I grew up in the mid-80s, that was pretty exciting, you know, and I won anyway. And
did you? You know, what was your time? How slowly?
You know what? This was in a time probably before stopwatches. I think we counted in our heads, but I reckon it was probably about half an hour.
Joke.
No, I don't know.
But a long time.
The finer details are a bit blurry, yeah, but, you know, this is something that went down in family history.
Time
anyway.
Passed differently in those days anyway.
Yeah. So I had this book launch, which Brian sadly couldn't come to. He said, "I wish I could have been at the event, but thought I'd fracture my ribs instead." He had a bit of a fall around that time. "Oy gewalt," he says, a lovely bit of Yiddish. And so,
Oy gewalt,
yeah.
That just means
Brian isn't Jewish, but he's very well versed in Yiddish, among many other things that he's well versed in.
What is that?
It's an expression of kind of shock and disappointment, and dismay, really.
Very good.
So it goes on from there. But this is—it's a postcard that makes me think of the lovely relationship I have with my uncle, who has done so much to encourage my writing over the years. So much so that when my last book was published, I dedicated it to him. So this is the David Litvinoff book, which I gave a dedication, which I will just find. It says, "For Brian Case, who started me writing and kept me reading, with my thanks and respect." So what I'm referring to there is the writing jobs he gave me over the years, the reviewing, but also he's a great one for just sending you books that he thinks you might like.
Right.
Things you've probably never heard of.
Oh, that's the best gift, isn't it?
And he has impeccable taste, and he knows what each individual person will probably go for. So, so that postcard makes me think of all of those things.
And I can see why you held on to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
So, actually, I think the cards today, from my intuition, are all kind of family-ish related. But let's start with your first card, Sophia. Mm-hmm. It looks like it comes from further afield.
It is Kilimanjaro, a snowy-topped Kilimanjaro with clouds swirling around it. And this,
it's a big card, this. It's like, slightly oversized, isn't it?
It is a large postcard, which I would normally shy away from because then you've got to write more. But actually, my dad and I have both written on the back of this. So it was one that we sent, from Tanzania to my granny. And the reason it's of Kilimanjaro is that when I was, when I was very young, my dad read an article in a magazine or a Sunday supplement or somewhere about
stuff you get in those newspapers.
Yeah, I know, the stuff that these journalists churn out. absolute nonsense. But this father had decided, or he was lamenting in this piece, the fact that in Western society these days we don't have rituals for when girls or boys turn 18. So, I mean, you know, you might have a party and get pissed, but it's not much more than that.
No, it's not really formalised.
Yes, and it's just that, yeah, it just happens and there we go. So this father in the article that my dad read had decided that when each of his children turned 18, he would go off for a week, strictly a week, anywhere in the world, but it had to be to do something bonding. Activities like skiing and shopping were deemed too frivolous, so it had to be doing something more serious than that. And so my dad decided he would copy this father, and I am the oldest of his children, and so I decided... Yes, exactly. I actually can't even really remember how I decided on climbing Kilimanjaro, but I decided that is what we were going to do. So off we went. I was obviously 18 at the time. Trained is a bit of a generous word. I mean, we'd probably gone on a few long walks on the weekends or something.
Yes, but not Kilimanjaro, is it?
No. So we flew to Nairobi, and then I remember getting a very, very, very hot minibus for an entire day driving across the border into Tanzania. I mean, beautiful landscape and very interesting, but it was hot and jet lag, and I was also on anti-malaria pills of some sort, anti-altitude sickness pills of some sort. And eventually that evening we got to this hotel in the foothills of this mountain, and we had a lecture about, we were starting our ascent the next day, and we had this hour-long lecture before dinner about how it was going to be a very tough climb, and on the final ascent we'd be woken up at midnight, and we'd have to climb for 6 hours in the dark, and we'd lose toenails and have diarrhoea every 20 metres, and it was a fairly horrifying lecture.
Did you begin to have second thoughts?
Well, a little bit. We were released from that lecture and we staggered into supper in this hotel, in the dining room of this hotel, and I didn't feel great, so I said to Dad, oh God, sorry, I'm just going to have to go to the loo. And I don't remember much after that, but I fainted, and I'd never fainted before or since. Cracked my head on the side of a table going down, and you can see I've got a scar around my left eye.
Oh, yeah.
Could put that on the blog as well.
Large close-up.
And I came around, there was a tussle going on. Two American doctors happened to be staying there as well, and they'd seen me hit my head, and they were trying to get my head back so they could look at it. Dad hadn't, so he was trying to get my head between my legs. So I came around to this sort of backwards and forwards motion. And then my dad said he pulled away his hand, it was just covered in blood, and I had a big, big gash. So that meant that I had to go to hospital and have it all stitched up, and it was all very dramatic. And luckily it was fine, despite the American doctors being quite dramatic at one point and saying, oh my God, she's going to have brain damage. And dad thought, oh Christ, I mean, this wasn't the bonding trip that I bargained on. So actually what happened is, we didn't climb up the mountain because I actually slept, I remember, for about 48 hours after that. Had the most incredible black eye you've ever seen. It was really impressive. But we had, actually, ironically, it turned out to be a really bonding week because the area we were staying in is beautiful. And we did go for some walks. We went to a safari park for a day and saw lots of flamingos and elephants. And actually, I think for a father and daughter, it did end up being very, very bonding.
You couldn't script it, though, could you?
No.
You couldn't plan that.
No, I mean, I definitely wouldn't have planned that. So this is the postcard that we sent to my poor granny, like alerting her to the news via a postcard saying, Dear Granny, I hope this finds you well. After a slight change of plans here, brackets, we'll explain when back. Dad and I are having the most fantastic time wandering through coffee and banana plantations, seeing local people and eating like kings, taking masses of photos. So we'll show you all when back. All my love, Soph. And then Dad adds a little bit saying, minor disagreement between Soph's head and a table on first night meant the climb was cancelled. Anyway, so we had a brilliant time. But poor granny, I mean, I presume we got back and we told her, hopefully before she got this, and was worrying about her granddaughter's head. But
we get cards where people say, oh, this reminds me of a holiday, reminds me of a trip. It's very rarely something that reminds you so specifically
of an event,
of a moment when your head hit the table. You know?
This complete catastrophe. Yes, it is a good story.
Very
good. To tell the tale. Anyway.
But you decided to hold on to it. You didn't want to get rid of that.
Of the postcard?
Yeah.
No, definitely. I've got to keep this. Yeah, yeah, forever, forever.
But it came back to you.
Oh, I know, no, no. Oh, I tell you why. Because my grandmother, very sweetly, she was a real postcard sender. And when she died, we found bags and bags and bags of everything that her grandchildren, actually, and her children had sent her, which was kind of so moving. Mm. It's embarrassing. Actually, as my homework before coming on here, I was going through a lot of them, and so many of my letters and cards to her start, Dear Granny, I'm so, so sorry this is so, so late.
Oh.
Thanking her for, you know, the
At least you're saying that.
Yes, yeah. That's true. I just felt very guilty.
So if she made the effort to keep them, then that's the least you can do to now hold on to them,
yeah,
I suppose.
It's very special to have, I think.
Yes. It's odd because it's from you.
Yes.
It's a strange thing, but you
I
still
know,
want to keep them.
But I love that I've got it, and then we'll remember that story. Well, the scar will remind me of that story forever, but as will this postcard.
Very good. Well, thank you for sharing that with us and with our listeners. Another quick one from me in the past postcard style. This is I suppose it's a combination. It's both a map card, and people are very fond of map cards, and it's a multi-view in that there are multiple views.
Oh.
And it has a sort of wavy line, Sussex by the Sea, in case you wonder where Sussex is.
I grew up in Sussex, so...
By the sea?
Well, not totally by the sea, about half an hour away from the sea, but there is that go. Brighton, that middle one?
It must be, mustn't it?
Yeah. Lovely.
And this is from 1984, and it was sent to Wickford in Essex. And it's someone called Lorraine and Julie have written this one. So many boys keep asking us to dance, but there's so many we have to keep saying no. But seriously, we have been asked to dance by two men and both are creeps.
And that's it.
Yes, that's the key part, yes. Yeah. So there's a lot in there. You know?
I love that.
That's all you need to know about their trip.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast, and my guests today are Kieran Pym and Sophia Money Coutts. Now, Kieran, what's the second card you've got?
Okay, yeah, the second card is from the town of Tupelo, Mississippi.
Oh, yeah, where do I know that town?
You know that town probably because it's where Elvis Presley was born.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. So this is a card that shows the Tupelo Hardware Company, and... This is, as you would think, a hardware store, but it sells more than just hardware. It also sells guitars, and this is where Elvis bought his first guitar. And so this otherwise rather nondescript mid-20th century American building has gone down in history as the place that Elvis bought his first guitar.
Well, sacred ground, really.
Sacred ground,
absolutely. For so many people.
And so this reminds me of a different era in my life, a different era in history, really. This is from 2005, January 2005, when I went to Mississippi and to Tennessee. At that time, I was a feature writer on the Eastern Daily Press. It's a relic, a last relic from my life before children, when it was possible to do such frivolous things as go on trips like this. It was probably the best years of my career as a journalist, I would say. Well, I'd been a feature writer a few years. I hadn't yet got really ground down by the news cycle. I was full of youthful enthusiasm, and it was also pre-2008 when the economy hadn't collapsed. And at this point in 2005, the American tourist boards for the Deep South seemingly had absurd amounts of money to lavish on paying for provincial British hacks to travel from Norwich to Memphis, Tupelo, Mississippi.
This is a junket and a half.
It's a junket and a half.
Yeah.
To come
I think
on
those days maybe gone a bit as well.
Yeah, they really have.
I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
But back in 2005, seemingly there was money to spend on paying for people like me to travel from Norwich to go to these places in the Deep South. in the hope that we would write a suitably complimentary article that would entice the good people of Norfolk to consider Mississippi as their next holiday destination.
In their thousands.
I believe shortly after my article was published, you couldn't move through the Deep South but for hearing Norfolk accents wherever you went. I take responsibility for that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
So this particular trip was themed around Elvis's 70th birthday.
Right. Gosh, that seems young, actually, doesn't it? Now,
it does.
It was a while ago.
He would be in his early 80s now if he'd, or mid 80s if he'd lived. But
I love a sort of tenuous anniversary like that. You can
peg an article to. How much can we hang on this? I know. Yeah.
And we're not sure about the place, so here's a hook instead.
Yeah.
Well, we all live and die by those. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I particularly like this because it reminds me of one of the more surreal episodes in my journalistic career.
How was it? How was the trip? Yeah. How was the shot?
So I found myself as part of a party of regional newspaper journalists from England who had been flown out to Tennessee and Mississippi, themed around Elvis's 70th birthday. And we were staying in a hotel which turned out to be the focal point for where people from all over the world, all over America, had congregated to celebrate the King's anniversary. And so wherever you looked around this hotel, there were Elvis impersonators.
Wow.
From the whole span of his career, from the kind of 50s through to, you know, the
all in a sort of contemporaneous history.
All of that.
History all flattened out.
Elvises everywhere. and other than Elvises, it was filled with elderly American retirees in leisure wear and baseball caps who had come in on coaches from Idaho or Iowa or Montana or whatever, come in together and to pay tribute to the King. I remember a group of us journalists getting a bit lost in this vast corporate air-conditioned nightmare American hotel and stumbling into what turned out to be a conference suite, only to find it full of dozens of elderly Elvis fans lined up in rows, performing a gentle synchronized dance come exercise routine to Burning Love.
Oh.
We just looked at each other. This was like a very weird dream. And suddenly we panicked and thought, we've got to get out of here before we get roped in. So we fled out of there. We went to the Shotgun Shack where he was born, which is like the kind of two-room little ramshackle house where
he was born.
Still
there.
It's still there. It's
Can you go in? Is it someone's?
You can, yeah. It's preserved as a little museum. We went to Sun Records studio in Memphis. We went to the Tupelo Hardware Company where I got this postcard. It was also the occasion of probably the worst and definitely the weirdest hangover of my life. Which happened after a night out on the bars of Beale Street in Memphis.
That sounds like a hangover worth having.
It was a hangover worth having. I really earned it and I enjoyed it. But it was, to quote Withnall and I, it was a real bastard behind the eyes. it was a real stinger. And the memories are hazy, but it involved a lot of bars, beer, whiskey, more whiskey. And the next morning, before we knew it, we were being carted off semi-conscious to Graceland.
Really? In this state?
In this state, which I think would be a weird enough trip in the best of conditions, but with the hangover from hell, really the King's taste in interior design and decor just proved to be more than my eyes and adult brain could cope with. I mean, everywhere I went, the weird questions just posed themselves to me. Why were the billiard room's walls and ceiling entirely covered in 300 yards of pleated, multicoloured fabric? Why was Elvis's den carpeted in garish green shag pile? Why were there so many animal furs everywhere that it made me feel queasy? Why did he need so many aeroplanes? Did he really need two televisions side by side so he could watch two shows at once? And none of these questions was satisfactorily answered.
No, I'm sure.
I came away with a lot of questions and a pounding headache.
Oh, dear.
But it's a card that reminds me of a mad, wonderful trip. I'm really from a different era. I don't think we'll see the like of those days again, or not for a while, yes.
No,
anyway.
No, and there are a number of factors that just mean that's not going to happen for a bit.
Yeah,
but except perhaps, you know, newly wealthy parts of the world. I think, you know, you might suddenly find marvellously well-furnished trips to parts of China or something.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, yeah.
In the same way they used to get flown out to Gulf states where they were trying to persuade you that it was great for tourists.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's very true.
In your Jumpin' Jack Flash book, Kieran, you've drawn a huge number of interviews, and I think that was a key part of you getting such sort of first-hand stories.
Yeah.
Was there much sort of written work you drew on? Were there letters and correspondence and postcards? I say postcards optimistically.
Yes. there were. I mean, one of the things that really whetted my appetite for researching this book was the discovery fairly early on that actually there were quite a few letters. I mean, insofar as Litvinov had been discussed before, it was always in terms of it's impossible to tell this man's story because he left nothing behind. And actually, various of his friends quite early on said to me, oh, yeah, I've got some letters. Yeah, you know, I'll look them out for you. It turned out that there was a tangible legacy. For all that he was a man who told one of his friends, Nigel Weymouth, that he only wanted to leave two pieces of paper behind in this life, his birth certificate and his death certificate. I mean, it's a good line, but it wasn't true.
Right.
And he left a lot of letters and, moreover, some wonderful letters. He wrote a great letter and a great postcard. And there's one which I thought I would mention.
Mm.
Just to give a little bit of context.
Sophia, do you know who this man was?
I have to say, I didn't, but I'm obviously going to rush out immediately after this and buy the book.
Can you sum him up in a sentence or two, Kieran? I mean, it's tough.
It is tough.
Because he was nobody in some ways, but in other ways he was...
Yeah, I spent 350 pages trying to sum him up. he was somebody who connected the worlds of rock and roll, art, criminality, the Lush Bohemian aristocracy, all of these worlds that intersected in London in very fruitful, interesting ways in the 1950s and 60s. Litvinov was one of the instigators of those culture clashes. He introduced people from Lucian Freud and Francis Bacon to the Rolling Stones and Eric Clapton, the Harlech family. If you had a Venn diagram of of London in those days and the ways that all those circles intersected, he would be standing in the intersection of all of those.
Yeah.
Just as a social figure. I mean, was he producer or no? He was a sort of social...
He wasn't an...
He was a fixer of sorts.
He was a kind of fixer, if he was anything. He aspired to be a writer. He was a bit of a kind of Fleet Street freelance hack in the 50s. But he was never defined by any one career. He was someone who hustled his way along, really.
Great.
And lived off his wits day to day, really.
And how did you, why did you come to him? Why did you want to write
Well, I came to him because, by coincidence, I read a couple of books in which he featured. I went on holiday, summer 2010, took two books with me to go to France for a week. One of them was a book by Ian Sinclair and Rachel Lichtenstein, a wonderful book called Rudinsky's Room, which features a chapter by Sinclair called Who Cares for the Caretaker? And this is all about his interest in Litvinov and the seeming impossibility of telling Litvinov's story.
That's actually how I got to read your book.
Was it?
From reading that one.
Right.
I wanted to find out more. I looked, and then there was your book. So I took the path that you'd already taken.
Well, you know, Sinclair's a wonderful writer, and he writes so beguilingly and mysteriously and enticingly about Litvinov.
That is a great book. That's
a wonderful book.
It's really
And Rachel Lichtenstein's side of the book is fantastic as well. But so that whetted my appetite, and then I started rooting around from there. The other book I took on holiday was a book called Journey Through a Small Planet by Emmanuel Litvinov, who was David's half-brother. And David only features tangentially in that, but it was a serendipitous coincidence that he featured in the two books I took on holiday.
Which you didn't know before at all?
I didn't know at all. No, I just...
How funny.
I thought, okay, someone's trying to tell me something.
Yeah, that's true.
And I was at a point where I really wanted to try writing a book as opposed to a 2,000-word newspaper feature, which is all good fun, but, you know, you get to a point where you think, could I do something a bit longer? And I seized on it, really, because it also struck me as one of the last substantial remaining untold stories about 60s London. And... So I took it from there, really, and it just snowballed. It took about 5.5 years, about 105 interviews, I think, and then obviously a lot of reading and a lot of travelling around. One of the places it took me to was the town of Llandowy Brefi in West Wales, Ceredigion, Cardiganshire, which is the town where Litvinov lived in self-imposed exile from about 1968 to 70. Just to give a little context to that, he was a man who had a foot in the underworld at all times, got up to some very dodgy things. He was, in the late 50s, early 60s, he was in the Cray Twins circle. But he was also friends with a lot of the kind of young aristocrats, the young bohemian artists, who relished the stories that Litvinov could tell about the craze in their circle and the mad, horrible things that he witnessed while knocking around with Ron and Reg. Witnessed firsthand and experienced, for example, in terms of the story that I open the book with, which is when he opened his door to his flat off Kensington High Street, took a fist in the face immediately, and then woke up to find himself naked, shaven-headed, tied to a chair, dangling over Kensington High Street from his balcony.
Wow.
After annoying somebody with underworld connections, well, as I say in the book.
He probably rubbed up with some of the people you were talking about.
I was going to say, some of the Tatler sort of,
they might not talk about it now, but...
Like the Harlequins, yeah, I mean, I'm sure, yeah.
He's bound to have.
Yeah. I mean, he had an instinct for finding people who had some spare cash to look after him.
He certainly did. He really knew how to...
Inherited or
people.
Nicked, clearly.
Yeah.
yes, didn't really matter
where it had come from.
Cash is cash, after all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of these incidents that he told his friends about in the early to mid-60s, one of the friends was Donald Cammell. Donald Cammell went on to co-write with Anita Pallenberg and, uncredited with help from David Litvinoff, the film Performance, which stars... Mick Jagger,
who
and
at
James
the time of recording, it's his birthday today.
It is.
Oh,
yes.
Lovely little detail there.
There you go, Sir Mick.
Great.
He's 76, okay. I think, yeah. And into this story, Performance, they put a load of Litvinoff stories from the early 60s, many of them very thinly disguised. So the one about him being tied to a chair, shaven headed, well, that that's something that happens to the chauffeur of. A barrister in Performance. A lot of stories from Litvinoff's life went on screen in this big film starring one of the biggest rock stars in the world at the time. This was a fairly ill-advised move on Litvinoff's part, but he was woefully indiscreet, and it's the kind of thing he did, really. So around the time the film came out, he had a word in his ear that it'd probably be very wise if he got out of London, because some of his old friends were not best pleased. And so suddenly...
Putting it on the big screen.
Yeah. So he vanishes from London, and the next thing anyone knows, he's living in an old stone cottage in Llandowy Brefi, this village in western Wales. And while he's there, he corresponds with his friend Sandy Lieberson, who was the producer of Performance. Sandy's a lovely man, and he was a great help to me, among other things, by giving me... all of his correspondence from Litvinoff and allowing me to quote from it in the book. So he let me have a letter which Litvinoff wrote from the house in Wales. I'm just going to read a little bit, fix it. It shows that Litvinoff was a man who, among other things, appreciated a good postcard.
Thank
so it
God.
Starts, this is in place of an address. It's just got something that's a little riff on the very long Welsh place names that surrounded him. So it says, all one word, from David in Celtic Limboland, where nothing is the norm, and quite rightly so. That's my best Welsh
very
accent.
Good. It's very good, I think.
Thank you. Well, I don't know if any Welsh person would agree, but...
You can write in at the usual
address.
Send a
postcard.
Address. Yeah, you have
please,
to complain.
Please write to Tom. It says, dear Sandy, thanks a lot for your groovy PC postcard. Almost my major event of the month, certainly the nicest. This is when he's living pretty much solitary in an isolated
Sweet.
Cottage in Western Wales, when receiving a postcard from a friend in London was, you know, a pretty major event. He says, I had a simple address once, 2302 179 Levy, David. Now, Levy was the name he was born with. He, much to his half-brother's chagrin, he took on their surname, Litvinoff, because it was more exotic. So he started doing that from teenage years. So Levy, David, HM Prison, Spark Hill, Birmingham 8. One day I may oblige you by patronising the same ever-welcoming property management company. When am I coming to London? Ain't got no plans. Why be crushed, miserable and pointless in London when I can be blue, manic and depressed in Wales?
Oh my God.
You do get my point, I hope. I don't seem to have emotions just now, but if I did, I would love you all to... I feel very honest these days, quote from Robert Maxwell, S.L. And he goes on in that vein, really. He was, for all that in many ways, he was a really unsympathetic character. He had a wonderful sense of humour, and he also had a keen melancholy about him as well, which makes you feel rather sympathetic towards him now and then. A really hard character to pin down how you feel about him. And in the course of my book, researching my book, my feelings towards him oscillated wildly.
I'm
what
sure.
are they now? Do you like him at all?
I found out things about him that a lot of his friends never really knew about, which was so off-puttingly grim. I couldn't categorise my feelings towards him in such simple terms as I like him. He was very entertaining, very interesting, very significant. And that was actually my kind of mantra through the latter parts of writing the book. It's not about whether you like him or not. It's about whether he's interesting and significant.
Yeah.
And no one really would deny that he was both of those things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Very good.
So that's David Litvinov.
Well, no, thank you for sharing that from the book. There's a sort of directness in his, as well as being melancholy, there's a kind of bleak honesty about
him.
He
is. And
I'm miserable.
He's been beaten down there.
It's a very direct tone. He was very sharp, very lucid, and there's a kind of Pinter-esque quality to quite a lot of his.
There's a lot of Pinter in there, isn't there?
There is.
And all kinds of resonances there as
well. Yes, yeah, and they came out of exactly the same world, pretty much contemporaneous.
So. And obsessed with power relationships and bullying and whether you were doing it or writing about it.
Yeah. Interesting. He was fascinated by psychodramas and would never let the dust settle. If he could engineer one, then he would really set people off against each other, sit back and watch the sparks fly.
I'm so glad I read about him rather than meeting him.
Well, you know what? I think that's the best summary of my feelings, actually. I'm so glad I wrote about him rather than meeting him. I'm fascinated to know what it would have been like to meet him. But
I'm sure you met him in your dreams a few times when you were writing it.
There was a point where he got into my subconscious so deeply that, he did creep into my dreams. And, it's weird.
Sophia, the people you write about are no less scheming and troublesome in many ways. They just dress it up differently.
Yes, I think 'twas ever thus, really.
It's just human nature.
Yeah, I think whatever end of the sort of social scale you might have come from, we're all human.
But your books are very 21st century. They're very contemporary. So it's far more text messages than postcards, I think.
Yes, there are probably, I'm trying to think, if in either, I don't think, I feel very ashamed. I'll put a postcard in my next book.
Yeah, I think it can be sort of tweely nostalgic.
Yes.
Which that exists, I think, with particularly these young women you're writing about.
Someone might have gone, I don't know, maybe a Scottish estate for a holiday and they're sending a postcard back from a fishing holiday or something. Yeah, I'll do that, right.
Yeah, if you could. And then I'm presumably on a serious percentage of the revenue of the book. So that's very decent
of you. Talk to my agent.
So what's the last... I think you've got two cards.
I've got two cards because...
And this is school days?
These are school days. They were both sent to me in my first year of boarding school. Again, my parents separated when I was 8. It was a pretty hideous divorce. And my mum moved up to the borders of Scotland and my sister and I went with her. My little brother stayed at prep school in Sussex. And so we were with mum most of the time. We saw dad every third weekend for a while. And so the way that he communicated with us before email and phones was by sending postcards. And he was really amazing. I think very much encouraged by
And this was boarding school?
This was, begin with, just living in Scotland for a year or so.
Right.
And then I was sent to boarding school. But these two postcards I've got in my hand relate to when I had gone to boarding school. But he was still sending...
Correspondence is really important for boarding school, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's changed a lot these days. But I remember, for instance, in the first 3 weeks at boarding school, it sounds sort of medieval now, we weren't allowed to use a phone. We weren't allowed to call... Right. Back because the theory was it was going to make us too sad. So,
gosh, I thought it was like just a punishment. No, not prison.
I mean, obviously, very, very privileged to be there in the first place. But yes, we weren't allowed to ring. So I do remember Dad sending me, so it was actually lovely doing my homework for today, going back through them all because they're just, and the thing is, they're not very long.
They're designed to cheer you up, I guess.
Yeah, mostly. I mean, they're not very long, a lot of these postcards. And quite often, my stepmother used to just send ones. Which would literally say S, kiss, kiss. She's called Shauna. And just, it was just a thing, sort of, the equivalent of sending an emoji, maybe.
It's all you need.
Just thinking of you, exactly. And so one of the things that Dad started doing when we were, it applied to my brother at boarding school as well, was sending quite racy postcards because all our posts would be laid out in the morning. And so this one I've got in my hand is actually a Herb Ritts image. And it's just Man with Chain, Los Angeles, 1985. And it's
Can you describe it? I'm sure one of your characters could.
Well, almost, yes. Yes, in fact, my romantic heroes don't look totally dissimilar. It's all sort of, a very muscled man, kind of practically a Michelangelo.
He has no head, though. That's been cut
a little,
off.
Yeah, the head's
you can see in
we're
shadows,
not really interested in the head, are we?
No, it's all
we're
torso and
the thighs
below.
And the bottom and the arms.
He's incredibly muscled, isn't
really
he?
Really muscled.
Like a sculpture.
Yeah,
right.
He is exactly like a sculpture with a very, very heavy, sort of like an anchor chain kind of around
presumably
him.
He's about to park up his bicycle, isn't he?
Yeah, I think, you do need one of those, depending on what bicycle you've got
around
in London.
Here,
it's
definitely.
Very sensible. So that was one that Dad sent me when I was 11 and that got laid out
No wonder you've turned out like this.
Yeah, exactly. No wonder I'm now writing bonkbuster novels. So that was, I'm sure, my sort of 11-year-old friends thought that was very amusing. So it says, "Soft darling, best I could do today, ! Think you are fantastic for your tennis, poetry and 800 metres, which I have to say was news to me this week because I just remember being terrible at sport at school.
You must have been good.
Well, I'm not sure I got any particularly good time, particularly in the 800 metres. Anyway, have a really good weekend. All my love, Pa." And it's just too sweet. So, yeah. Again, not long.
Yeah, it's simple.
But just saying, "Hi, have a racy man for your..." And actually, it was quite sweet. It's got a pin prick through it. So I obviously did have it up on my pin board.
Good. That's a sign of
which
love.
Which I'm sure my housemistress completely
I bet your,
disapproved of.
Your schoolmates must have been amused at that as well.
I think so. I don't remember others having their fathers sending them postcards. And I know that my brother at school as well was getting sort of, you know, naked women. And I think, but that, I feel like that would have done boys, maybe girls can be quite coy. I think 11-year-old girls, we were probably quite coy for a bit about this. For drama, I think it did his street cred no end of good that he was getting these racy postcards. I just love that that was how we stayed in touch a lot back then. It was just sort of, I mean, I'm not sure I was the best correspondent back. But
you're the one
nice.
In exile, aren't you? So you need the letters.
Exactly. We're locked up behind walls. So, yes, exactly. We need to be reminded of these things. And then the second one is sort of similar. I'm squeaking two in one entry.
Good
because, well, if it's allowed, because it's from my granny, who was a very, very supportive and wonderful grandmother. And she also sent many postcards. Slightly more educational, this one.
Oh, yes. We've changed tone here, haven't we?
Yeah. It is Bartolome Bermejo, if I pronounce that. Anyway, an artist. It's a 15th century... painting of St. Michael slaying the devil, is that right? Yes, St. Michael triumphant over the devil with the donor Antonio Juan. I'm not an art historian, so I don't really understand the significance. The devil is a sort of hilariously cartoonish character. St. Michael has got his sword hanging over his head. And Granny, who was a remarkable woman in many ways, she was married to my grandpa, and then my grandpa ran away with who became my step-grandmother, see so many divorces in my family, who was a woman who'd been... It was much younger than him and had been a bridesmaid at my grandpa's first wedding to my granny. My granny never married again. It was apparently quite the scandal sort of in the 60s. My granny never married again, but had an amazing, amazing life, was very active, like the keenest theatre goer, loved the arts. I was very lucky because I was taken to lots of theatre and music when I was a sort of teenager. And so she sent me, and she was always sort of educating us on sort of arty matters. So she sent me this basically again in my first week at school, saying it always takes a little while to learn how to get on and what the rules are. But I thought you might like the St. Michael. I think the devil is marvellously funny, and St. Michael doesn't see the joke at all. I'm all for the devil in this PC, though St. Michael is rather handsome, which surprised me again when I read it this week, because Granny was sort of never one to remark on men, really. Anyway,
Even saints.
But it just, yes, I love it. And
what's that bit she says about it takes a while to learn the rules?
Well, she was saying, basically, this was my first week at school. So it starts, "Darling Soph, hope all is well with you and that everything seems less strange now that you've been at Wickham some time." But I think but sometime it was sort of 2 weeks. So I'm sure it did all feel completely strange still. Mm. It always takes a little while to teach to learn how to get on and what the rules are.
I think that's really useful advice to send someone, though, isn't it?
Yeah, she was an incredibly wise woman, just saying, you know, it'll be fine.
That's advice you should send people for a new job or for anything, I think.
Yes,
it takes a while.
It takes a while.
You'll pick it up, don't
worry.
But
it'll be fine, yeah. And then, because I was homesick, I was definitely homesick. I mean, God, first day I went, my mum, I had to be sort of prized off my mother because I was crying so much. It's sort of inhumane. I know a lot of people obviously think about boarding school. I mean, I loved it in the end. I had the best 7 years ever. But yeah, I do remember at the beginning it was bizarre. What was I doing in this place with 500 other girls?
Very
anyway,
good.
So, yes, family, very sweet family postcards. It meant a lot when
valuable,
I was locked up.
Valuable to receive at the time,
yes.
I think. Yeah, very good. Well, look, thank you both so much for sharing these cards with me and each other and the listeners. Another quick reminder, images of all these cards, St. Michael and the Devil and Kilimanjaro and so on, Elvis's guitar shop, they're all on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, including one last one from me in the past postcard style, which you'll know from Twitter and from the book. This is Southport. It's got a deckle edge. Rather an amazing sunny day. It's a bit like the weather we're actually having at the time of recording.
Yesterday.
This, I can't read it. It's from the 60s. It's got an old threepenny stamp. The date is obscured, unfortunately. There's a special postmark advertising the Southport Flower Show, which was on August 28th, 29th and 30th that year. Book your tickets 40 years ago. And it's sent to Blackburn, Lancashire. And the message said, Oh, yeah, this is just like a little story that makes no sense really to me. Anyway, Les met me at the bus station, but the bus stopped at Lord Street. However, he found me in the cafe near the palace. I took the stick and sat on it and broke it in two. But Les is going to get me another one in town.
That's it.
So I think it's one of those shooting stick things.
Or is it a sort of spy? Have you uncovered some sort of great spy circle there? Was that sort of Kim Philby writing? I don't know.
I like your version better.
Yeah,
yes.
I think that's very mysterious.
Well, I'll.
Brilliant.
But,
that's wonderful.
But, yeah. I like it when people say, you know, I tried to do this, because that's actually the stuff of...
You could start like novels that. With all those postcards that you read out. Like, yeah. Honestly, you could spin out stories from those.
Yeah. It's always a seed of a story, isn't there? Something
yeah.
Because they're so kind of cryptic, they just suggest these incredible possibilities.
But I think maybe this is the story. I don't think it needs to go any further. I think it's just very, very short story. Look, before we let Kieran and Sophia back to their writing desks, I've got one more postcard for you both. It is customary for us to end on one of these. So this is one for you to have a look at.
Okay.
Oh.
Do we look at the back?
Do anything you like with it.
It's a flexi. Is it a flexi desk or a singing postcard?
Do you think?
Yes.
Edge. I'm glad I've learned that today. Why have they've cut the top of Big Ben off? Okay.
Well, I'm Kieran, you've got it. It's a postcard that is also a record.
Please tell me that it's connected in some way to the singing postman.
Well, maybe he could have had a career doing that. I don't think it is.
Hang on, so you could play that?
Disappointing. Yeah.
Well, young Charlie has been helping us out next door, recording every single utterance. And if we ask her nicely, she might be able to play it for us.
Wow, I've never even heard of that.
Oh, skipping about a bit.
Yeah.
Be my little sugar. Can you hear that?
Yes, yeah. That is remarkable.
Honey in the morning, honey in the evening, honey at night. I always say
this. Do we know who this is?
I don't think it's... No, it's a...
We Shazam it.
But I don't think it's an artist so much as a...
Because rights issues.
Specially done, kind of for a
postcard.
I don't think anyone made a lot of money doing recordings for postcards, but maybe they did.
I love it.
It's good for a piece of cardboard.
It's great.
It's amazing for a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
Really, I had no idea.
And it hasn't... Well, this one hasn't gone through the post, I don't think.
Right.
But it's probably sent in an envelope, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, as the House of Commons spins round and round at 45 revolutions per minute, that's it for this time on Podcast from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guests for sharing the postcards from their pasts, Kieran Pym and Sophia Money-Coutts. Thank you both.
Well, thank you so much.
You
it's
very
been a
much.
Pleasure.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardorstudios.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.